Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. As usual, a couple of warnings here. We are salty, angry, bitter, foul-mouthed, blasphemous, horrible people. If you're not into
Jesus.
That... Oh, yeah, and we love Jesus. If you're not into that and you're like some happy-go-lucky, like everything's fine,
Perky
and bad words
you.
Send you to hell... well, you may want to look for other spiritual guides besides your humble hosts here.
Yeah.
But we're Catholic. You don't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited that you're here. If you made it past the disclaimer, then buckle your safety
welcome.
Belts. I am one of your hosts, guests, here with my co-host, Diz. And
hey.
The question always is, Dizzy, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a preventative health drink, which is orange juice and fizzy orange flavored water and a large dollop of vodka.
Right.
It's like an orange fizz. I feel like it's vitamin C. It's healthy. It's like the alcohol is going to kill any germs.
It's basically like an orange Julius for grown-ups.
Yeah.
Oh,
that would have been good. Yeah. I'd bother to blend it. But you know what? If you're blending something with vodka in it, I'm not going to hang out with you and I'm certainly not going to drink it. So anyway, what are you drinking?
I am drinking some green juice. With a little bit of rum in there because my immunity still is weakened.
Voice sounds better this
week. Week two of the flu. I think that intro there was actually more words than I have strung together all at once over the course of the last couple weeks. So I've got a little apple and banana to make it taste like something palatable.
Okay.
And then there's like all kinds of weird stuff. There's like kiwi and kale and other green things that start with K.
I was going to ask if the green juice was the kind that actually has a lot of fruit in addition to the green stuff so that it tastes pretty good.
So it tastes mostly of apple and banana and rum.
and rum.
So
it's like a tropical moss punch.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the immunizer.
It's pretty dank looking though, I'll have to say.
It's pretty dank tasting is. Yeah.
Well, cheers to you then.
Yeah.
Hey.
And this week is kind of it's the week of our charism. If there was an order of church drunk devotees, this would be a big week for us because it's the week of Rageousness, which
is
our charism.
It is. It's our charism. And for those who aren't as deeply into the nerdism of the Catholic side as we are, a charism is like your special sort of virtue or affinity, perhaps. Like a lot of orders have them. Or
right, like the Franciscans, they're all nature-y. Like that's
even
part of their
charism. Even saints have them.
Poverty,
right.
You know,
they
give up everything so that they can just kind of live at one with God in the world.
We live at one with rage in the world.
For church drunks, our charism is Rageousness, which is our special little combination, obviously, of rage and righteousness.
Yep. The good kind of righteousness.
It is a real thing that we invented that is rooted in scripture.
It is rooted in scripture, and I think it's a real thing because people experience it. Like, we really experience it. I think others do. We'll talk about some of those.
Yeah.
And it is rooted in scripture, particularly, once again, back to that Catholic liturgical year nerdism.
Yeah.
In the year B readings, everyone, this third Sunday of Lent includes the story of Jesus overturning the tables and having his own moment of righteousness.
Right.
So we are gospel value Christians, and
this
is our gospel value.
Yeah. And it's one of our favorite readings for a whole variety of reasons. But it does, it's kind of the epitome of righteousness, which, like, Jesus shows up in this place that he has visited so many times before. He knows it and he loves it. He considers it to be his father's house, you know, like all
the
these
temple
things.
Temple of Jerusalem.
And he sees, you know, the money changers and the fact that people are basically trying to turn a profit off of devotion to God.
Mm-hmm.
And he freaks out and he's like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
And I think we've all had a moment of freaking out about looking at
more and
something
more lately
that creeps into our faith life or some facet of life, if it's not our faith life, that is really important and values based for us. And we say, this is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we react very much as Jesus does. He starts flipping over tables and in some versions of the story, whipping people.
Yeah, making weaponry and using it on folks. But then showing compassion to others. That does come up in the story. But, you know, righteous rage is something that's valuable in human society.
Absolutely.
Like not even just in our faith practices, but, you know, people, it's good to get angry.
It is.
About
it's necessary
that
sometimes.
Is necessarily needs to change.
Yeah.
So rage is a good thing if you use it well or if it motivates you to take action, right? And this is a time in the world where we're seeing people taking action. Like last week, we kind of just mentioned, you know, the students in Florida who are standing up about gun safety and school safety. And like, that's rage.
Yeah.
Like, that's rage that moves you to action. That's the same rage that has moved people throughout history to overthrow things.
Well, and you know, today was in churches was the reading of Jesus in the temple. But also the big event today culturally was the Oscars. And sort of the movie industry has already had its own, you know, rageousness, like flipping over tables in the temple kind of moment where the people who are insiders said, we just can't abide this anymore. Yeah. You know, like this is our life and our livelihood and who we are and what we do. And it's time to flip over some tables and say, this is not going to happen anymore.
It's kind of like the whole world has been caught up in righteousness. They are almost all church drunks
a little
at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, get on the right side of history, folks.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that there's an important distinction to be made, though, also when you talk about righteousness, where like, for us, we look at righteousness as something that is A, justified, that there's a core value, something that is so ingrained in us that says this is right and this is wrong, and it supersedes whatever the rule of law or the rules of the religion or the rule of whatever it is that's kind of the rules of man are ruling the day. And if you are flipping the tables on that, well, flipping the tables, that's the wrong term to use.
mixing metaphors.
If you are doing the opposite of that and you're saying that the rules that we have created are absolutely sacrosanct and they need to be, you know, followed at all times, then you have righteous indignation, which is really not that cool sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of like the prideful version of righteousness where you're too righteous to be called out on your shit.
Right.
Or how dare someone.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, that's the kind that just promotes or prolongs kind of what we would call structural sin or social sin.
Keeps the status quo.
Sin, yeah. You know, when we talk about justice, we are talking about fairness and particularly fairness for the least of these, right? Mm-hmm. For the poor people. And we've seen that over and over again throughout history, right?
Yeah.
That you'll see righteousness overtake those who are downtrodden to lash out at those who are just being righteous assholes instead of...
Well, I think it's interesting that the alternate reading for today in parishes where there's a lot of preparation going on for like the RCIA and people are getting ready to be baptized at the Easter Vigil and things like that. People are getting ready to be confirmed. The alternate reading in parishes that wanted to focus more on that side of the preparation of Lent was the story of Jesus with the woman at the well, you know, who she has all of these flags and markers, you know, she's a woman, she's a Samaritan, she's there
unclean,
in the middle of the day. Like, there are so many reasons not to talk to her according to those social
laws.
Yep. And Jesus, in a little bit of like, just righteousness, maybe not righteousness, but he just sat with her to be with her and to listen to her story and to tell her even some of her own story. And so there's like that dichotomy where you get between those two stories, right? Jesus bucks the rules more often in his life. He would do it just through righteousness, through tenderness and compassion and being present to people. But at the same time, when a line was crossed, you didn't want to mess with Jesus, you know, like you did not. And people would get so upset when he would break those rules, you know, like people would be like, oh, you're not supposed to talk to her.
Yeah. Oh, who are you to be doing this?
You're not supposed to be doing this or that on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And I just love that we do have this story in the gospel where Jesus says, you know what? Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Fuck your rules.
Right.
Fuck your.
Watch me your throw
absolute.
A fit.
Like rejection of everything that this temple is supposed to be about. Like, I'm going to go off. And I imagine people must have been terrified.
I think so. I think it was a shocking scene. And, you know, after his disciples are kind of like, yeah, bro, like, good job.
Yeah.
And the you know, the official Jewish, you know, Sadducees or whoever happens to be around is like, you know, who are you to do this? And we have this whole temple metaphor of our bodies being the temple. And Jesus is like, yeah, like, I own that. Like, watch what else I'm going to do, essentially. Doubles down on the righteousness. So
totally.
I think we're in good company. I actually had heard a good homily about, you know, that didn't call it rage, but that indignation and that it is righteousness that motivates, you know, Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and, you know, Martin Luther King, anybody else who's been oppressed. It's righteousness that lights that fire in you to get up and say no.
Yeah.
And be on the you know that God's on your side, essentially.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, and there's kind of another part to the story that you know, I think scholars look at, but it's not necessarily something that we talk a lot about when you, mm-hmm. when you imagine Jesus in the temple. Like, first of all, the aftermath of that, right? Like, everybody knows the story. Jesus goes in the temple, flips the tables, you know, cracks the whip, says, get out of here. This is a den. You've turned my father's house into a den of thieves, blah, 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 blah. But then, like, what comes next, right? Like, do we imagine that everybody just fled in terror and Jesus sat there, like, panting in the middle of the temple square? Like what happened? Did he just go Hulk and then like come back down to earth?
Yeah.
But what happened was they sat and they occupied the temple square, like that whole area where all the commerce would normally be going on, and they wouldn't let anybody else in. Like the apostles with Jesus sat.
Like, we'll be sitting teaching here now.
And they teach. Yeah. And then Jesus says, this is what this space should be for. So he sets an example of what it is. So that's an interesting kind of follow up.
And I think they just took it outside. Like, I think their business continued.
Right, totally. Yeah.
Because, you know, people are coming from all over the region. And, you know, what's happening is they have to make ritual sacrifices. So they're buying various animals and they have to do it in a certain way. So that's where the money changers come in, all this stuff. It is interesting, though, that the people who he just asks to, like, it's like Jesus is, like, flipping over tables, like, full fit of rages. Then he comes, like, the dove sellers. So that's, like, the lowest offering you could make. Like, so this is, like, for the poor people who scraped up their money to get to Jerusalem. He's like, okay, now you guys, could you just take this outside?
Right, yeah.
Like, please take this out of here. Like, this is the wrong way to go, everyone. Yeah. So he kind of shows mercy to, like, the poorest guys.
Right, well, he always had that soft spot for
flipping
the poor.
Over the tables and, like, the guy who's selling the rams or the lambs and then is like, oh, dove people. People, like, can you take the doves out? Yeah. I don't want to, like, knock the doves over.
Totally. And then the next step, right? So they occupy the area and they teach and then people just stood like they would have been surrounded by, you know, guards and Pharisees and Sadducees and all these people who would, like, gather at the temple, and they would have been like, oh God, what do we do? Like, Jesus just went completely freaking nuts.
Well, he gets questioned, you know.
Right.
They weren't thrilled with
eventually.
Him.
It's within just a few days that he gets put on trial, right?
Right.
So this is kind of the first domino to fall, right? So
yes, you're right.
While he's sitting and teaching, they're coming up with the plan to take him out.
Oh, he thinks he's going to come flip over our tables or make some trouble for him. Yeah, I'm sure they didn't appreciate it because their pockets were getting lined. Like, corruption was deep.
Right.
Yes.
So that, like, and then when you start to really piece it all together, right, and this is going to get into the end of Lent, you know, and the whole story of Holy Week and stuff, but it starts with the entry into the city, right, Palm Sunday, and everybody's like, oh, it's the Messiah, and he's here to win the war for us and to take his throne and do all this stuff, and then nothing, right, like crickets, like Jesus is like, oh, hey, thanks, guys. Anybody want to, like, sit down, have a meal, talk about God? And they're like, this is not what we had in mind.
Say what?
And then a few days later, there's this, like, explosion of righteousness in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a few days after that, he's dead.
Right.
So it's like all of these things where the expectations build up. And then, you know, was it like the pressure that Jesus was under to save these people that, like, had this kind of explosion of anger that we never see at any other time in his life? Is it him just saying, all right, let's do this. Like, I'm going to have to die. I'm going to flip over some tables. Come get me.
Well, who knows? You know, he's going to the temple because the Passover's coming. It's like he's probably going there to teach or to listen or to pray. And maybe it just set him off to walk in and be like, look at this shit. Like, this is what I'm here for. And I can't even get in the door without going through this. Who knows? Maybe he was just running hot, gearing up for it, you know?
He may have just been having a rough day.
Yeah.
You know? But it was like, whatever it is, I think, one of the most fascinating stories that we have.
And I think people love this story. Yeah. Like, this is one of the more, like, quoted stories, I feel, and, like, referred to, because it shows such passion, right? Such energy and emotion, which we lose in translation.
Right.
Like, Jesus does have some very, like, scathing words throughout the Gospels.
For sure.
But I think we can easily kind of gloss over those or, like, attribute them to whatever.
Yeah.
But this is, it's hard to misattribute flipping over tables.
It's one of his most human moments.
And driving people out with, like, a whip.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that we can do too, you know, like Jesus walking on water is like, all right, well, that's like Jesus, the Messiah, Jesus, the Son of God, Jesus flipping over tables. That's like, oh yeah, no shit, I can flip over some tables.
That's the human side.
Yeah.
I can relate to this Christ. I can
do this. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like it's an empowering message.
Maybe that's why
way.
We like Rageousness so
I
much.
I think so. I think because we like to metaphorically flip tables. As much as physically flip tables. Say,
sure.
Yeah.
Mostly metaphorically.
Mostly metaphorically.
Yeah. But also, it reminds us that our rageousness should be used for good.
Yeah.
Right. So that is kind of the caveat. Like, don't let your rageousness just be rageousness if it doesn't motivate you to do something good out of it.
True. And if there's not good at the heart of it, right?
Right. If your anger is not truly righteous anger for a good reason that you're not going to follow up with some action, then it's not rageousness.
It's not. It doesn't count.
Nope.
Yeah. It doesn't
and
count.
You're not a church drunk.
Not a church drunk.
All right, so it's been a while since we did something stupid and fun. We do a lot of,
on the podcast for
that's
an
true.
Official thing.
We haven't played a game in a while. That's
a lot
all
of
I mean.
Stupid fun things.
All right,
yeah.
So we wanted to revisit Mad Libs.
Yes, it's time for Church Drunk Mad Libs.
Woohoo!
And the task this time was to somehow re-envision this our favorite story or one of our favorite stories, so that there is some sort of new life or new energy. My thought was like, do it like a news broadcast or something like that of this story, whether how it would happen in a modern day context or something like that. So we each drew up our Mad Lib stories, and we're going to have to request some words from each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have Mrs. Guest this time to be our,
she didn't
our
want
word
to
giver.
Play with us today.
I think she just doesn't want to be that close
I
to me because
she's
been hearing me cough for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you have the plague.
I know.
The flu. Also, she has a lot of exposure to our rageousness.
This is true. So, rageousness is not unfamiliar to her, either through us or of her own.
True. She's also of the charism.
We're going to go back and forth. We're going to fill in our Mad Libs, and then we will read them for our entertainment and yours, dear listener, or perhaps listeners, plural. Who
you
knows?
You never know.
Who knows? So,
okay.
I think you're up first to ask me for a word or two, because you have more blanks than me.
An example of something bad.
Like a
noun.
A noun, a bad noun. Oh God.
An injustice. Something
an
you don't like.
An injustice or something that I don't like.
Something
slavery.
Bad. Oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just need a plural noun. Any plural noun. Something.
Owls.
Owls. Okay.
A festive event.
Festive event. Festivus.
Oh, Festivus.
Festivus.
And, okay, go ahead.
An adjective.
Hairy.
Hairy.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
A minority group.
Oh, man.
Or a group. You can just do a group.
Albanians?
Okay. Good job.
Yeah, go to, because that one was weird, and also you have more than me, so.
Okay. A location, proper noun.
Oh, but not Albania. South Africa.
Okay.
And I need an office item.
Stapler.
Stapler.
A communal space.
A cafeteria.
Thank you.
A weapon.
A dagger.
Dagger.
An action verb.
An action verb. Slam.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Noun.
Do two. Any noun. Oak tree.
Okay.
An adjective.
Scaly.
Scaly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
I don't know why I thought that.
All right.
Another noun. I want two more nouns, actually. You
two nouns.
Give me two nouns.
A sledgehammer.
Okay.
And a toenail.
Gross.
All right.
Okay.
I need an adverb. Something Lee.
Yes, I know what an adverb is.
No, I know. I'm just giving you time to think.
Okay. Shakily.
Shakily.
Mm-hmm. A collective noun.
A collective noun? As in like we or they? Like a pronoun? Or
no,
like a
group of something.
A gaggle?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. How many more you got?
I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay. Excuse me. I need a negative adjective.
I thought of what I want to say. Let's see. A negative adjective.
Yeah, negative adjective.
We'll do the indignant.
Indignant. Okay. Right.
Is that even a good word?
Indignant. Adverb. Indignant. It was rather indignant. Okay.
Yeah. An exclamation.
Poop!
Okay. And a noun.
But not poop?
Yeah, no.
Let's go with ice cream.
You can do poop if you want.
Ice cream.
Okay.
I need a nickname.
Honey.
Honey.
Two adjectives.
Two adjectives. Smiley.
Mm-hmm.
And powerful.
Great.
No, wait. Potent. Not powerful.
Okay, potent.
Potent. Give me something disgusting.
Toenails.
No, I already used toenails for
you. I know, but it's gross.
It is gross, but you gotta get on with something else. Something disgusting.
Bananas.
Bananas?
I hate bananas. They're slimy and awful.
Okay.
Is that not gross enough for you?
No, that's fine.
Gross or vomit?
No, it's
vomited
okay.
Vomited bananas.
I will make it
regurgitated
grosser.
Bananas.
You said there's...
Bananas that you ate and then vomited at.
Okay.
Okay,
I
that's
like
the worst. Can I get a weapon from you?
Ninja star.
Ooh, good one.
An insult. Something that you would call somebody that is not nice.
Bastard.
Okay. Well done.
Padre.
All right.
Okay. A noun and a verb.
A noun and a verb. Bluebird. And stumble.
Okay.
I need another office item.
Let us refer to a post-it note.
Post-it note. Okay.
My favorite office items.
Nice. All right.
And a valuable item.
A diamond ring.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Okay.
I need a body part.
Ankle.
Ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Okay.
That's it
for me. That's it? Oh, I need one more verb.
Swimming.
Okay. All right. I think you're up to...
I need a...
Oh, you need a minute? And pause.
Hold, please.
Would you care to break open the word for us?
Yes, this is like a different sort of lexio, you might say.
A closer reading.
Shut up. In those days of turmoil, in these days. It matters
modern
today.
Day.
Yeah,
okay.
In these days of turmoil, greed, and political corruption, Joshua Josephson stands out as a fierce advocate for justice and righteousness and righteousness.
Mm.
Take, for example, the recent demonstration he made against slavery. Since the Festivus of the Albanians was near, Joshua went to South Africa. He found in the national cafeteria those who slammed oak trees, sledgehammers, and toenails.
Lovely.
As well as the gaggle of idiots seated there. Poop, he exclaimed. This ice cream is smiley and potent.
Yes.
How dare you? Thus, he made a ninja star out of bluebirds and stumbled that hideous gaggle all out of the cafeteria area with the oak trees and the sledgehammers and spilled the diamond rings of those who would profit from this treachery.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. He really stood up for, I don't know who.
Festivus? I like using stumble with a direct object. Like, I'm going to stumble your
I'm
ass
gonna stumble
out of
that gag. Yeah. I'm going to trip them as they shove them and they fall.
This group of fools.
I think we should stick with that. When you're feeling righteousness, you just stumble some fools out in front of you.
I am so upset. I'm going to stumble these bastards.
Watch out.
Right where the sun don't shine. All right.
Oh.
So, next up, we have, this is a modern day take. What I tried to do was imagine, all right, so if we take it out of the temple and we put it somewhere else and we put Jesus in today's world, what would he be most upset about? Now, obviously, the temple would still be totally valid, right? Like, there's all this controversy going on about who does it belong to, and he would be like, it belongs to God. Shut the fuck up. But
true. Should make us billboard for that.
Right. But I thought, you know, like, where else might Jesus find inspiration for righteousness? So then I wrote a little news brief about it.
I can't
and you
wait
helped
to hear
finish
this.
It off.
Okay.
Chaos today at the Department of Interior. When a group of Jewish extremists stormed the office of director Ryan Zinke? Zinka? How do you say this asshole's name? Anyway, he's the guy who's, anyway.
anyway.
In charge, he's in charge of the Department of Interior. He's one of Trump's cronies. We'll call him Zinke. Director Ryan Zinke. So, chaos today at the Department of Interior when a group of Jewish extremists stormed the office of Director Ryan Zinke, brandishing owls and yelling about their father's house. The militant activists seemed quite hairy, some even flipping over tables, while others destroyed staplers with their daggers. Apparently, the pack of scaly Jews, your word,
you
not mine,
set me up.
Apparently, the pack of scaly Jews felt quite shakily that the recent repeal of the Antiquities Act and subsequent exposure of protected national monuments to drilling, mining, and other corporate interests was rather indignant. I don't know if we used that properly, but we'll go with it.
Okay.
Upon breaching the doors of Director Zinke's office, the leader of the group, who goes by the code named Honey, shouted, yeah, that's Jesus, shouted,
Jesus, my honey.
Your job is to protect my father's house, but all you're doing is leaving giant puke bananas all over everything you touch.
Oh, it paints a picture.
Creation is a gift, you ignorant bastard. He then threw a post-it note at Zinke's ankle before being escorted out of the building. No word yet on what charges might be pressed against the group or if they will ever again be allowed to swim in the streets of Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, I think maybe because of the bomb cyclone, they might be swimming in the streets of Washington, D.C. right now.
You never know.
Yeah. Hopefully not. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I like to imagine staplers, like, impaled by daggers.
Yeah. I like that we attack the staplers with daggers, and then Jesus just throws a post-it note at his ankle. Like, I really can't hurt you, but I really want to hurt you.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It just shows that the Son of Man is full of
big
compassion.
Jerk. Yeah. It was awesome.
The puke bananas worked
puke
out
bananas.
Pretty well.
Yeah. Well, when you said bananas, I'm like, I mean, like, if his job is to protect creation and it's covered with bananas, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Bananas are really gross.
But puke bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is kind of what they're doing at the Department of the Interior.
Just that's my new go-to insult.
Everything with
you
puke
bananas.
Yeah. Blech. All right.
Well, there's that.
And on that note.
Righteousness. Let us know. Do you indulge in righteousness? You can tweet at us at ChurchDrunkPod Twitter. You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com or read us on the blog.
Yeah. Coming this week on the blog is going to be the Lenten reading list. So last year we had the reading list for Lent. And I'm going to go ahead and re-up that. I'll get a few suggestions from Diz here, and we'll post that one up there. I was hoping to do it last week, but again,
the plague,
the flu. So we'll get that going, and then coming up around the bend, we're actually going to be taking a look at one of the books from that reading list.
That's right,
Henry Nouwen's The Way of the Heart.
Yes,
so
my Lenten reading, which I am doing. We're halfway through Lent, everybody.
Yeah.
It's going a little faster this year.
We're getting there. Yeah.
So.
If you guys have not read Henry Nouwen's The Way of the Heart and you want to really be in on it, it's not really one where there's like spoilers or anything, but it's also a short read.
Go pick up
a copy or download it and take a quick look. It's worth your time. And we'll be diving into that next week. So that's exciting.
We'll go a little literary event. We haven't done that in a while. So
we haven't. Yeah, we haven't really lit nerded out in a little bit. So
everyone's in for a treat.
Oh
dear.
Yeah.
Anyway.
First scripture and then lit nerds.
Just breaking it open.
Yeah. Welcome to Church Drunk.
Okay.
So, righteousness accomplished.
Yep.
And that wraps up this week.
That's it.
We'll catch you next week here at Church Drunk, where we're kind of like the Goldilocks of the spiritual community.
Because righteousness is just too soft.
And rage is a little too hard by itself.
But righteousness.
Righteousness is just
right. Peace.
Cheers.